Hi, Barbie.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
That's nice that you can recognize our numbers, or am I the only Texas person?
No, it actually because last time I wrote down your name when you called because you said this is Barbie, so I wrote it down next to your name, and it actually I even wrote down how old your son is. So it tells me more about you than I
Thank you.
remember. It's like Barbie has a son. Eight.
Great. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome for my, 51-year-old brain that can't remember anything. I see Christy, hi. And I see
Hello.
someone in 920 area code that I don't recognize the phone number. Who's that?
That's April.
Oh, hey, April. It's Diane.
Hey. I might be on mute a bit today. I have my 1-year-old up, so.
Well, you're forgiven. Yes.
Cute, but not always quiet.
Yeah, I relate completely. Hi, Jane.
Hello.
Sue. Hello, Sue.
Hello there. Hi.
We're going to wait just a minute. We're going to let everybody be. Because we usually get a bunch of beeps right at 2 o'clock, 2:02. So I'll wait just a minute before we get started.
Okay.
So we'll get a bunch of beeps on the recording. It's a gorgeous day in Atlanta today. What's the weather anywhere else in the world?
Seattle, it's raining.
Raining.
Is
Yeah,
that like
pouring
Washington?
down in Texas.
Pouring in Texas? Oh.
And in Seattle, it's actually not raining right now, so it's kind of amazing.
Well, it's raining in where I live in Federal Way, which is like 20 minutes from Seattle, where you're right in the city.
Oh, yeah, it must be on its way then. Okay.
Sorry.
Sorry.
Rainy gets nasty.
Okay, well, let's just get started with a quick check-in. Last time we met, we talked about parenting positively. How did things go for everybody?
Really nice. My husband and I wrote down some values and put them up on the different places in the house, like you're being helpful, you're being independent, I'm making good choices, healthy choices, those kinds of things, and we would try and scatter those to him throughout the day whenever he was behaving well. So
So the notes were for you guys to help remember to compliment him.
yes, to compliment and different words other than, oh, that's so helpful, or that's so helpful. That's so helpful. We just thought it would be good. I
Right.
use good choice a lot, independent, responsible, nice, those kinds of things. And he's 8, so we kind of kept the words, instead of saying compassionate, you just say you're being nice or you're playing nice with your sister. So we tried to observe him at least, we tried to do twice an hour when he was home, each of us. And give him
That's
just a
great.
compliment, or we're noticing you and you're not misbehaving. So,
That's great. Well, there's a tool that I've seen, and I bet if you Googled it, you'd find it. But it's like a 101 ways to praise a child, and it gives you like lots of great phrases like that, like get 'em or good job or whatever. But there's like 100 different ways to do it. It was really cool tool.
oh, good. Yeah, we even got some thank yous and smiles from him. Like he was really noticing that we were in a positive way instead of just always barking at him.
It's amazing how, when you notice that, what a great tool it is. I mean, and I would encourage you to share that with your child's teacher. And just, my kids particularly, when you compliment them, they go, oh. I mean, even now, it's like, thank you so much. It's about noticing what really feeds your kid and giving it to them as much as you can. Cool. Who else wants to check in? Donna, I see you joined us.
Hi, yes, Donna joined.
Yeah, we're just checking in and letting everybody know how things went with positive parenting over the last couple of weeks.
This is Sue here.
It is. I agree with the previous person that it is kind of cool to see it on their faces. And I think the thing for me is, and you just gave me a good idea, of just putting reminder signs around so I can check on myself to make sure I'm doing it, you know, just to keep it rolling. Because he does, my son does feed off of it, and so it's really helpful to see.
Great. Yeah, sometimes we need the reminders as much as they do. Megan, I see you joined us as well.
Hi.
We're just doing a check-in, letting everybody know how things went with positive parenting over the last couple weeks. Anybody else want to check in? Great. So what hasn't been going well the last couple weeks?
Well, this is Jeannie. I didn't want to be a downer. Seems like everyone had a good week the last couple of weeks. I have two sons, and one is older than the other one's 15, and I'm one that's 12. He's the one that's a little bit more intense, which I've mentioned before. And he does like positive affirmations and compliments and stuff, but it doesn't always work with him as much. So it's been actually a very, very intense week the last couple of weeks. This morning was very hard. He still thinks we hate him, we're mad at him when we tell him to go off video games, and it's, I don't know what he responds to as much, you know. Goes up and down. He's just so, still so moody. It's just incredible. So it works for a little bit, and then it doesn't work. It's just no consistency with him at all. And my other son, who's older, the positive and the praise is at work, but this other son, he doesn't take it in as much, and then it's gone the next day. So it's been kind of
Jeannie, if you got curious, what do you think is the difference on the days that it works versus the days that it doesn't?
Honestly, I think it's when he gets his way. And he decides to be happier about something, and then he doesn't. If he gets his way, he's happy as a clam, but he gets, you know, and if he does, and then we just say that's enough, and then he just gets moody and mad, and he doesn't want anyone telling him no. I mean, that sounds, you know, I mean, yes, developmental seems like an 8-year-old, but yeah, he just doesn't accept it.
And it's hard, when, you know, it's like if I'm honest, we all like it when we go our way better, and you're mm-hmm. right that, you know, having an expectation that makes sense given his level of development is a good one. But, you know, maybe the opportunity here is to help, you know, to look for the win-win in everything. You know, so it's like, how can I help him get what he wants and also accomplish what I need as a parent? And so that can be the ultimate opportunity, that if you know that what motivates him is you know, getting some of what he wants, maybe it's a negotiation, maybe it's a compromise, maybe it's a, you know, something in between. Mm-hmm. And the win-win can help you, because it sounds like if you win, you get your way and he doesn't, and I'm totally, you know, paraphrasing and making this oversimple, he shuts down and then nothing works. So if you can find a way to win-win, even if it's maybe a little bit of a compromise in terms of your rules or your boundaries or your guidelines, it might be a baby step to move things forward.
What are you going to do with someone who oversteps the boundaries? Like, you have the time limit. This is what you get for video times. Like, even this morning, you know, you got himself dressed, whatever. The motivation, he gets up, he got dressed, did everything, you know, and then I'm like, oh, okay, you get some time doing that because you got your stuff together. I didn't even have to remind her. I mean, that's his motivation because he gets up. He does everything on his own. He's pretty independent doing that. But he doesn't get off on time. It's 15 minutes over.
So,
and then he gets mad.
Right. And so here's the thing. So I think we're going to talk about shifting expectations today. And mm-hmm. so if my guess is what's going on for you is that the expectation you have about what's reasonable for him in terms of getting off might not be consistent with what he's able to do right now. And so I would encourage you to kind of look at that as the area of focus and maybe take aim there as we're talking about expectations
mm-hmm.
today. Does that make
mm-hmm.
sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anybody else want to check in? before we jump into art. That was a great transition. Thanks, Jeannie.
Oh, sure.
Anybody else want to share success, challenge, weather report? We did that before a few of you got on.
I'll share something. This is Megan. My son was recently diagnosed with anxiety, and it's something that, you know, we've kind of always felt that he had, but it seems to be getting worse the older that he is. And luckily, during school, things have been going really well, and while his teacher notices anxiety, you know, he's in a very safe and predictable environment. But when it comes to other things, he's been kind of freaking out. And I took him to a basketball evaluation this past weekend to be placed on a team, which doesn't start until January. You had to attend a mandatory evaluation. And he was just a wreck and almost in tears the whole time. They recognized his anxiety. They let him go first before this enormous line of people. They were very kind and nice to him, but he couldn't calm down during the whole thing. And even after it was done on the way home, he was very, very anxious. And so, you know, that's been making things hard, trying to expose him to new things and different things and activities.
Well, and it's hard because you you want to keep him safe and emotionally comfortable, but sometimes it's hard to do that and get things done in the world.
Right.
So, yeah, I can hear your concern, Megan. All right. Any other check-ins? So the first step, so we're in the workbook and we're on chapter 5, session 5. We're going to talk about shifting expectations as one of the four critical response areas. And before we jump into that, what I want to make sure is everybody takes a minute and takes aim. And so we're going to take aim and we're going to pick one area of focus. We're doing that because we don't want to overwhelm ourselves. We don't want to overwhelm our kids. And it can be related to setting appropriate expectations. It cannot, you know, directly, and we'll figure out how to connect the two. But just take a minute and get really clear on what you're going to focus in on. And I say clear because a lot of times we pick an area of focus that's a little bit too big, and so we say, I'm going to take aim on homework. Well, what specifically about homework? Is it about getting a structure in place to do homework at a consistent time every day? Is it about helping my child to keep their hands to themselves while they're playing with their friends in the neighborhood? Is it about, helping my child to helping my child manage his anxiety when he's in a new situation? You know, so it may be something as specific as that. So, everybody, take a minute, jot down what you're going to take aim on, and I would love to hear from each of you. So, if you can. Just tell me specifically, and I know I'm going to ask you to take yourself off of mute and let me know. So, Barbie, what are you going to take aim on?
I need a few more minutes.
Okay. All right. Christy.
Working on it.
Christy. That's all right. Christy.
Christy?
Yeah.
I want to take aim on helping Caleb find ways to calm himself down that are not destructive to me or property.
Okay. So non-destructive ways to calm down.
Yes.
Okay. Great. April.
Okay.
I think I want to take aim on homework and finding, I need to work on actually having dinner prepared and being ready ahead of time.
So getting a little bit more proactive in terms of for that time period of the day.
Well, I think I need to lower my expectation as far as him being able to activate himself.
Got it. Okay. Jeannie, what about you?
Well, that would be the video games or just any technology, TV, video games, his Nintendo, his DS, just getting off of it.
So the transition from playing a game to being off a game.
Yep.
Okay. Sue, what about you?
I'm trying to figure out how to word it, but something like this to help keep the school day morning time more positive for both of us by using positive language with one another.
Hmm.
I'm thinking of this morning and how it was just a morning of my son who's 10 just, I don't want to go to school. I don't want to do this. I don't want to. Just a lot of that, even with sitting down and saying, gee, I wonder why you're not interested. I wonder what's on your mind, you know, about this and that. So I know it comes on the vague side. But
well,
I
what I'm hearing is that you want to take aim on having more positive communication with each other during the morning.
That's good. I like it.
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
No worries. Donna, what about you?
Hi. I want to take aim again, and I think I've taken aim on this a couple weeks ago, is like the same, our morning routine is to be able to stick to our morning routine and get to school on time. Because one of the challenges we've had before is, you know, while, you know, eating his breakfast, he would play with his iPad. And so that really distracts him from, you know, keeping his breakfast time to around 10 minutes. So even if I put that away, or even if we've already discussed that iPad is not part of the morning routine, he finds something to distract him. So, you know, either it could be a piece of toy or something else. So I wanted to make sure that, you know, the morning routine is established and then he can play, like maybe on our way to school or, you know, an extra 5 minutes before we leave home.
Well, and so this is, so I'm going to poke at this a little bit, Donna, because the morning routine for a lot of us is several steps. And so I'm wondering whether it may be a little bit big to take aim. So the question is it more about coming up
when
with, go ahead.
Like when it's eating time, I want him to just eat. You know, if he wanted to be able to have to play, like finish his food quickly, and then he can have that extra time. But I wanted us to be out of the house by 7:30.
So it sounds like what you're really talking about is managing distractions during morning. Is that right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So how do you feel about just focusing on that as a challenge, which is he gets distracted with whether it's the iPad or the whatever else, and you need to kind of figure out how to help him to avoid getting distracted.
Right. Because one of the things I'm also avoiding is, you know, yelling too much because I don't want to send him to school where I've, you know, given him like a big, you know, dose of yelling.
Yeah. Well, and so it makes sure that if you're having a hard time getting him out the door, that you get frustrated and you get triggered and
yeah,
you know, you're in good company when you yell, I'm sure. There's lots of us that do that. So staying calm
is my day.
Always a good thing. So Donna, do you want to take aim on staying calm, or do you want to take aim on helping him manage his distractions?
I think it's really the distraction, because when I see him like keeping to his task and to the routine, I feel more calm, and
okay,
that really doesn't trigger me.
Okay, great.
So.
Megan, what about you? What do you want to take aim on?
I want to help my son stay calm in situations that don't go his way or situations that surprise him. For instance, this past week, he came home from school and found that his sister had been playing with one of his toys, and he had a little freak out about that. And another time when he asked his brother to go play outside with him, his brother said no, and so, you know, he really overreacted. So I want to try to help him, you know, figure out a way to stay calm and come up with other solutions in situations like those.
Okay. Barbie, you ready?
Oh, yeah. I just want my son to be able to eat breakfast. Most of the time, he does not want breakfast unless I've made pancakes or waffles.
Okay.
Otherwise, he goes out the door. It almost becomes a fighting point for him. So he just leaves with nothing in his stomach. So.
Okay. You want to take aim on eating breakfast every day?
Eating breakfast.
Great.
Without me making pancakes and waffles every day. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So if we go to our topic today, which is shifting expectations. I love this topic. It's really, I would say that, you know, there's a few of these tips that were very pivotal for me in my own parenting path in terms of getting, you know, kind of one of those aha moments where it's like, oh, yeah, I totally get this. This makes perfect sense to me. And expectations were one of those. Because I think a lot of us live with a lot of shoulds. We probably should all over ourselves. We have a lot of rules in our head about how things are supposed to go, or we look externally for, you know, the way that we think our kids should behave or the way that they should be able to do things. And, you know, when we're setting expectations for our kids, what we really want to do is we want to challenge them to improve. We want to challenge them to be more than they are. But what happens a lot of times is that we end up setting expectations that are unrealistically far from where they are right now. So, for example, with most of our kids, they tend to be behind their peers developmentally, you know, 3 to 5 years. And we did in the campaign we did in August where we sent out the videos. I don't know how many of you guys did our videos, but you know, we did take the 3 to 5 challenge. And, you know, for me, the aha moment was when, you know, my son was having a really difficult time in 5th and 6th grade keeping track of his assignments in school. And I went, okay, wait a second. If he's 3 to 5 years behind, what do they do in 2nd and 3rd grade to help their kids keep track of their assignments? Well, there's a sheet every day that goes home to the parents, or there's a note every day from the parent, you know, from the teacher to the parents, or you know, there's a folder that has all the assignments stapled together in nice and neat order. And I thought, wow, well, so that's about what he can handle right now. He can't handle capturing it and making sure he has all the right papers and making sure it gets turned in. You know, so it was this aha for me to go, how do I set an expectation for him that's more consistent with what he does, what he can do? I don't want to just do it all for him. Because that's usually what happens is we end up in conflict because we don't want to do it all for them because we want to challenge our kids to do well. We don't want to enable them, but we don't know how to set the bar. We don't know kind of how much is too much, how little is too little. You know, so how do you decide where to set your expectations? The language we use is scaffolding. And what you want to do is you want to set your expectations in a way, start by figuring out what your child can do successfully. And when I say that, I'm going to even put a caveat on that because with our kids, a lot of times they might be able to do something once or occasionally, but if they can't do it consistently, it really is, it may not be realistic for them to be able to do it. So you want to set expectations for your child based on what they can reasonably accomplish and what the next step is. So a lot of times we'll stand up, you know, it's like if our kids are, you know, 8 or 9 years old, we'll look and we'll say, okay, here's what all the other 8 or 9 year olds are able to do. My child should be able to do this. Instead of kind of saying, okay, what can my child do? And what's the next level of independence? You know, so in the morning, you know, trying to avoid distractions. So, Don, I'll use you as an example. It may not be realistic that your child at his age can avoid a distraction. It might be realistic that when you let him know that he's been distracted, that he immediately goes, oh, wait, I'm distracted. I need to get back on task. And I remember this story distinctly. My son was in 3rd grade, and we talked a lot about what his job was at school and how it wasn't his job to not get distracted. It was his job when his teacher told him that she noticed that he was distracted, to jump back in and to try his best to you know, get back on task when somebody let him know that he was distracted. And so it's about setting an expectation that they can reasonably accomplish and then scaffolding and supporting them beyond that. So what comes up for all of you guys as we talk about shifting expectations?
is Barbie. I think it's huge because really we can't change the situation. The only thing that we can change is ourselves and how we perceive it and then how we react to it. And how we react to it is obviously the way we're parenting our children with ADHD. And so I think it's us looking at it in a different way, not having the expectation of, you know, child number two to look like child number one and three, but they are, you know, where they are, and just help them get to the next step or the next level.
That makes sense. I think a lot of times we set ourselves up for frustration. One of my coaches says that an expectation is a disappointment waiting to happen. you know, so it's easy. We set ourselves up for frustration and disappointment if we set expectations that are not realistic for our kids. Other thoughts?
I guess I have a question, Diane. What is the expectation of someone 12 years old, and I know developmentally probably 8, realistically getting off video games? That's, I guess I would want to know that because now he uses the card, oh, I'm really like an 8-year-old, so I guess 8-year-olds really can't get off, so he's playing that card, smart enough to realize, okay, now I'm really not 12 developmentally, I'm really like an 8-year-old, so I should have never thrown that out because he puts that back at me and says, I can't do these things because now I'm really 8.
Well, so it's not so much that he can't do them. You want to expect that he will. It's just a matter of what structure does he need to make it happen. So what motivation do you have in place for him to get off the computer or the video game or whatever it is?
Well, he has to go to school. I mean, the motivation, well, to get on it, he had to get all the stuff done. He, you know, he gets himself dressed independently, he ate breakfast, brushed his teeth, everything without being told, and then he got off for school. But the problem
okay, wait, so
is
wait, wait, wait.
To, he so can't.
I'm asking a different question. What is his motivation to get off, Jeannie?
There probably is no motivation.
Okay. So what do we know about the ADHD brain if it's not motivated?
They're not going to do it.
Right. Okay. So step number one might be that it's not reasonable to expect that he can do it without some kind of motivation. How does that feel to say that?
Well, I mean that makes sense. But he's going to be losing time when the next time he does go on it. I mean, I try.
Well, so it sounds
rewards.
Like so. Does he more of a carrot or a stick?
Excuse me.
Does he like the carrot more or the stick more? Which some of our kids like being able to.
Oh, I know he likes. Probably the carrot,
responds?
But it always has to be moved with him. It's not enough. The carrot works for a little bit, but then you need a high bar because so what? I want more.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Right.
The carrot works,
no,
and but the bar gets higher for next time.
Yeah. So at 12, I mean, it's an age at which they begin to become a little bit more independent. And I can tell you from my 15-year-old trying to get off the computer at night, I give him a 20-minute warning, a 15-minute warning, a 10-minute warning, a 5-minute warning, a 0-minute warning. You know, so he really does need, you know, that transition time. And I learned the hard way that if I don't stay on top of it, he loses because it's the end of the day. He's tired. His sense of time disappears. And even if he knows he's got to get off in 5 minutes, the part of him that knows how long 5 minutes is not engaged because he's really hyper-focused on the game and he's tired. So if I choose to let him play at that time of day, I know that it's going to need to be my job to continuously walk him through the transition process off the computer. And oftentimes I'll have to stand there for the last 10 minutes and watch while he literally shuts it down and gets himself off.
Mm-hmm.
But he has to have a motivation, and he knows that if he gets off and he's upstairs within a certain period of time, then he gets to have the computer time the next day. And if he doesn't, he doesn't. Now, the clincher here is that my son is old enough to understand that there's something other than now. And a lot of the kids on the phone, only you know, you've got 8-year-old, 9-year-old kids, All they know is right now. And so they don't think about the fact that, oh, if I don't do this, if I don't get off now, I won't have it tomorrow. So it's really important to understand whether your child gets the concept of a future consequence. And if they don't, then it may not be a very good motivation.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jeannie, how does that help you to set an what's a reasonable expectation for you to have for your son around getting off video games?
Well, honestly, I think the problem is I shouldn't even let him have it in the morning. I mean, I think that's part of it, which I know. You know, but he gets everything done, and I'm easily manipulated by that for some reason, because he does get his stuff done, whatever, and that gets him motivated to get out of the house. But then he can't get off, and that's where the crux is.
Right.
So there has to be more of a hate to do consequence, because that brings up a lot of anger, and that's not good before school. You know, so it just needs to not be eliminated. It needs to be eliminated in the morning, and I know that. But in the afternoon to get off. Sometimes the consequence does work, so that's the problem with them. Sometimes it does, and the carrot does work. Sometimes it doesn't, so I'm trying to find what's going to work for him. It totally varies. It's just not, like I said, the carrot isn't enough for him, so he needs another. It's not enough before he used to earn it, which I think that's what I'm going to go back to again. Everything he does, he has to earn it, but then the motivation is still to get off. It's not even earning it. He gets it, but then it's to get off it. There's no motivation to get off it, so it has to be consequence. If he doesn't get off, then he doesn't, and then he loses it, which I don't like using consequences because he gets very negative and angry if he has consequences, because he could be a very angry person. So then the anger flares up, you know, and I have to get him down from the anger, you know, and I'm just dealing with that whole ball of wax there. You know, one thing.
It sounds like it's not realistic to expect that you could have a consequence without him getting angry. Is that fair? At the end of the day, when he's tired.
Oh, to not have a consequence?
Sorry. It doesn't sound like it's realistic for him to not get angry at a consequence.
Well, what do you do when he doesn't get off, though, when it's like 15 minutes? My husband will just pull it out of the wall and say, you're done for the whole week, and he will not give it at all. And that he'll have the whole week of anger, and I'm like, that doesn't work either with him. You know, so we're trying to find something that works with this boy because he's so different from my other one,
with
ADD.
Well, I guess the question is, so, you know, you're going to want to play with carrots. You're going to play with carrots and say, you know, he's at the point where transitioning off is really difficult, and so you want to set a realistic expectation and help him to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And so start by focusing on that. And so it's kind of like, how can I help you to get off?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and maybe it's standing there with him, and maybe it's, you know, helping him to, you know, create an incentive so that he can, you know, that he if he gets off, you know, what's something else he loves to do in the evening?
He has intended to do DS, but I don't want him using more video games and more, you know, FaceTime stuff. I mean, he has Legos and everything else, but once he gets into he's doing World of Tanks. I don't know if anyone's heard of that. He's a little bit older, so he does World of Tanks. He has Legos he can build, but then when you're in the video game mind, that's all he wants to do. You know, he can't get past that. And I'm like, no, you're done. You're done for the evening.
Yeah.
I try to get him done with everything by 7:30.
And how long does he play on the video game?
I only give him, like, between 20 minutes and a half hour time. That's it. You know, we'll have a total of an hour during the week, you know, an hour each day. If he gets his homework done and everything else during the school week. And then on weekends he gets a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And Saturday.
Well, and so what I would encourage you to do is maybe spend some time with him talking about, you know, talk about the problem and say, you know, I don't want to take the video games away from you during the week, but if we can't find a way to get you off, then we're going to have to, you know, like in the mornings, you're going to take away the video games in the mornings because you can't get off. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you don't want to have to do that in the evening, but you've got to solve this problem. So how can I help you? How can I help you to get off? You know, so... you know, do I need to stand here with you? Do I need to give you a 10-minute warning? Do I need to, you know, How do you need to take a break every 10 minutes? You know, what do you need to do that's going to help you to be successful in getting off? And
mm-hmm.
he may or may not talking. Be able to engage mm-hmm. in that conversation, but what in that resonates for you, Jeannie?
I guess the realistic expectation, what he can do, but I know I guess to me, I don't like to see him, I don't know, I'm not disappointed, but I think, like you said, the scaffolding, whatever really that means, and it has to be, I have to figure out a way what's going to work better, and this is what I've been battling for a while with him, you know, because he's very explosive. And even if you say, if you have 5 minutes left running, you just made me lose the game. Now I'm going to give 5 minutes more because you made me lose. And I'm like, it's 5 minutes left, Ryan, and then you're done. And then he won't get off in 5 minutes. So I do, like, pull the cord and rip it out of the wall because that's what he does. He's like, you made me lose now. Now I had 5 minutes left, and now I need more time because I'm not going to finish the game. You know, that's his behavior. It's not good. You know,
so I'm kind of – so the thing that I just heard you say, Jeannie, is that, you know, he's behaving – poorly. He's behaving mm-hmm. maturely. And
yep.
the solution you came up with was, well, maybe I should have behaved immaturely as well.
Yep, I know, and I can't do that. My husband has done that, and I'm like, that's not going to work with him.
So know, it's so. About setting an expectation that's realistic and finding a way to the parent, and this is the thing, you've got a conflict, right? So you've got the
mm-hmm.
part of you that doesn't want him to get angry, and you've got the part of you that wants to have him, you know, follow the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question is, can you have both? And if you can have both, which one are you going to choose? Because you're choosing one of those right
mm-hmm.
now. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm dealing with this morning. Like, boy, just taking away the video game, my house would be so much quieter. And he even decided, he's like, you know what, I don't think I need video games all the time. You know, if I just had more friends around and whatever, he doesn't play with his brother much. I mean, he has friends. He does have friends. They're not, like, right next door. You have to drive to their home. But he's
yep.
conflicted. You know, he doesn't want to do video games.
So,
he doesn't know what else, you know. So, yeah, it goes on and on.
I'm going to move on, but it feels like you need to find a realistic expectation and whether it's realistic
mm-hmm.
that you haven't played video games or not.
Yeah.
Okay. What comes up for anybody else in terms of expectations? Kristen, what's a realistic expectation with regard to your son getting calmed down?
Did you say Christy?
Yes, ma'am.
I don't know. I'm relating to the other lady who's talking because my son behaves the same way and is actually very destructive. So I don't know.
Well, and so, I mean, I think that the thing is that there's two sides of this. One is prevention, and then one is management, right? So it's kind of like, can we prevent the meltdown? So does an effective transition strategy help prevent the meltdown? Or, you know, when we notice our kid is starting to get worked up and starting to rev up where they're getting destructive, you know, If they're starting to lose their calm or you're starting to lose your calm, you know, the job one becomes, how do I help my child to calm down?
Yeah.
And you just
like this morning, his outburst was, if you get ready for he agreed to the terms last night. If you get ready, you make the bus today, you can have your iPod to take with you to listen to music. He did not make the bus, so he didn't get his iPod. So he lost it and kicked a hole in the wall today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how many minutes did you have between the time he was starting to get upset and the time you kick the wall?
Not minutes, it's seconds. There's no minutes.
So he's literally a 0 to 60 kind of kid. He's fine,
yes.
Everything's great, and then all of a sudden he's over the deep end.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's hard in that situation because it's not like you have a warning. It's not like you can handle a transition. And walls are precious.
Yes. I mean, we have his little anger box set up of things. He has bubble wrap, Play-Doh, sand, papers to rip. I mean, he has all these things, his punching bag, all these tools that he could use.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't.
What's the realistic expectation when he's triggered in terms of knowing what his tools are to calm down?
I'm at a loss, honestly. I don't know what to do.
Well, my guess is that it's probably not very realistic. So what do you do to help him, to direct him to the options he has?
Well, when he's not upset, I mean, we talk about where they are. We talk about it in counseling. We talk about this room. We set up a space in the office just for him to do this, the place to go calm down, and where I won't talk to him because that triggers him.
Right.
Talk about it in non-upset times so that he'll hopefully go there in upset times. But
and so if when he gets upset, if you engage at that point, what is his reaction when you engage?
Worse. It's worse. So I have started stepping back and, doing nothing, honestly.
Okay. And so when you do nothing, how does he react?
He'll break something, and then he'll eventually calm down.
Okay.
If I engage, he'll just continue to escalate and eventually run away.
Tell me what you mean by run away. Like he'll leave the room, or he'll
run down the block. No, run outside the house and go somewhere where I can't find him.
Okay. So it's definitely, from a trade-off perspective, it's easier to, to stay as engaged as you can so that he doesn't, so that he stays safe. But separating out is going to be, sounds like it's more helpful because it gets him, it helps him to stay more calm. So I'm wondering, one of the things that we talked about, and I don't know if we talked about this in the group before, but is code words. I wonder whether a code word might be helpful for him.
We tried that. We tried that last year. And he did not like that idea at all and was not open.
Mm-hmm. So what does he want to have happen?
He what?
What does he want to have happen?
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe it's time to get curious again, Christy. I'm wondering whether it's kind of, let's talk to him a little bit and when he's calm and do some more exploring. And he's a year older, and maybe it's time to go back to the table a little bit and see what he thinks about the whole situation. How does that feel?
I'm definitely willing to try anything.
And it's hard because it's scary because you don't see there's no upside, because if you try X, then you're worried that this is going to happen. If you try Y, then you're worried that that's going to happen. And sometimes it's about picking the best you can, and maybe neither of them are great solutions. Anybody have any thoughts for Christy based on your own experience that you would share?
We have some holes in our walls. This is April, and after we fixed a couple and got a few more, we actually had Nathaniel on a calm day go pay for this stuff and then fix it himself. And after he fixed it twice and paid for it, he stopped hitting the wall.
Cool.
So I don't know if that's helpful, if he's at the right age for that, but he realized that it wasn't fun to fix the wall. And he now, he'll go kind of pound on his bed. He is 10 now, and so that's, he's really mad. And I can do the exact same thing. I can't step in. The pounding on the bed helps them, or I say, do you want to run around the block? Go. I don't go with him. He runs around the block himself.
Good, good. Well, and I think that that's part of it is kind of figuring out what's reasonable at each age and trying stuff. And it seems more like trial and error, but it's about creating, you know, Christy, you know, the marathon is not a sprint, and it's about kind of getting enough creative ideas going so that you feel like you have more than one choice in any situation. So, Megan, I know that your challenge is also emotional intensity. What kind of comes up for you as we've been talking about calming down and some of the tools that Christy's using?
I just feel like that my situation has a lot in common with what Christy's and Jeannie have been saying. You know, we've been there too, and things, it's like they can just snap so quickly, you know, from fine to completely out of control. And I, too, have found recently that when I step back and don't say anything and let him get it out of his system, that works better. And I just have to hope that nothing gets, you know, broken in the meantime.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so you had said specifically that you were taking aim on situations that surprise him or don't go his way. What's a realistic expectation to have for him when you know that he's going to have a situation he doesn't like?
I guess I've been trying to think about what I can do, and I think maybe one of the biggest things is just model, like maybe even overly model to him how to handle things that aren't going my way. So, you know, if something surprises me or doesn't go my way, I think I'm just going to have to really make an effort to be like, oh, wow, this didn't turn out like I was hoping. Let me figure something else out and just keep trying to show him other ways of handling problems.
I love that because I think that part of what it does is it validates for them. And I think that's one of the steps that a lot of times we forget is that it really is disappointing when things don't go the way that you want them to. And so even if our kids go, you know, even if you take a second to go, wow, I know that just was not what you planned on. It must be really disappointing for you. And you model, like you said, how you handle disappointment. It gives them permission to be disappointed, and it makes them to feel like, oh, it's not like I'm not supposed to be disappointed, but I am supposed to handle it in a way that is productive instead of a way that is over the deep end or that, you know, gets in the way of my relationship or, you know, is destructive or whatever. Does that make sense?
It does, and I think I'm going to maybe even have to start rewarding him for handling situations okay, because I've been telling him over and over, you're allowed to be disappointed, you're allowed to be upset, but you're not allowed to throw a fit. And it just, it's like it doesn't even register with him at all. So maybe if he does do something, you know, halfway handles it okay and he gets praise and gets a reward, then maybe he'll start to actually connect that, what I've been saying to him.
Well, and the other thing you might consider doing, Megan, is that if it's, you know, there's several steps to the process. One is avoiding getting, you know, getting triggered. And the other is, you know, calming down really pretty quickly or taking responsibility to try to calm down really quickly. You know, so there's several steps in this process. So even if you were able to say, hey, buddy, I can see you're getting upset, you know, let's use one of our calming tools, whatever those are with him, whether it's a few deep breaths or whether it's, you know, take a break and watch TV or whatever it is that you do to help your child calm down, you know, if they immediately engage in that calming down behavior, that's where the praise comes, which is, you know, again, it's not their responsibility to avoid getting triggered. It is their responsibility when they become aware that they're triggered to try to calm down as quickly as possible. Does that make sense? You're shifting where the focus is.
Yeah. I find it's when he's in that mode, he can't hear what you're saying. He can't. He just has such a hard time calming down that it's like once he's past that point, it's really hard to get him to come back.
Well, and so it may not be realistic for him to come back when he's that triggered, so that your work becomes in preparing him and in helping him with transitions. And the thing is that the surprises and the disappointments are really a transition. So it's like we're on this path in life. It's like I expect something's going to go this direction, and all of a sudden it doesn't. I have to transition to the new way of life. And so it's, you know, I know Elaine talks about using code words in this instance, and I don't know if you guys have heard her say that or if I've said it before, but she has one of her kids who has a really difficult time with things not going his way, and she uses the code word, I think it's bubblegum. And bubblegum means, I need to tell you something that's going to upset you, so take a deep breath. You know, but it's like, you know, it's warning him that I'm trying to help you to not get triggered, but you're not going to like what I have to say. You know, so it's a transition tool. I don't know if that resonates for anybody. Other thoughts in terms of shifting expectations from folks or in terms of this conversation we've been having? So how can you use some of this around the mornings?
I'm listening to this and trying to see how I can apply it.
So what's a realistic... go ahead.
Well, and I kind of like... Let me get my thought for a second here. I kind of like the idea of the code words, which is slightly off topic, but I think that would apply to my son really well. But for positive communication, again, just more of that me vocalizing my own issues or vocalizing in regards to communication, just like what we were talking about with when you're dealing with disappointment. Because I realize I do that sometimes, and then I kind of fade out of it. So maybe trying to apply some of that with positive communication, like even just self-correcting myself. Susan, why did you just say that word? That's not very helpful, or something of that matter.
Yeah, the phrase I was just talking to a client about this the other day that you can use is try again. You know, so if your child says something snarky or unkind or whatever, you know, language, you know, the challenge is you can just say, try again. You know, and it's just kind of that simple sort of, hey, the language you used wasn't, you know, family friendly, however you want to say it. Try again. And that can be true for any of us. Whenever we get snarky or anybody gets off balance or they say something that's really not received well, you know, I find my kids say, try again, Mom. You know, that wasn't very nice. Okay, try again.
Right. And this is I feel as though it can't help suck up or set him up for the rest of his day at school when he starts the day off just being kind of a grump and just saying no, 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 without having really thought through what he's saying no to. But saying no for the sake of whether it's having the control or whatever it may be, I just feel like, oh, geez, that's just got to goof up so much of the rest of his day if he starts it off that way. So,
yeah. No, and that's a great observation. And we talked about this last week, and I don't remember which group it was, but about the positive parenting and about how, you know, if they say a negative something, you replace it. And you say, okay, so you just said something negative. Why don't you say three nice things? And I did this with my kids when they were younger. If they say something unkind about their sibling, they have to then say three nice things. You know, so it's like,
right.
You know, you're balancing it off. But it's like you said, if you focus on the positive, it helps you have a more positive day, which is really what you're trying to move forward.
Right.
Okay, getting close to time here. I want to give everybody a chance to do the wrap up. So we're back in the workbook and we're on page 22. So take a minute and answer these questions. What did I focus on? What did I pay the most attention to in this conversation today? And then what's my clarity? What was my takeaway? What is a realistic action step for me to take? And 4 is, how can I set myself up for success with the action? Take a minute, answer those questions. Would love to hear from a few of you what your takeaways were and what you want to commit to for the next couple weeks before we get together again. Donna, what about you? Donna. Maybe she has us on mute.
Hi, sorry. I was on mute.
Okay. You want me to call in somebody else?
Yeah, can you pass me for a sec?
Okay. Well, everybody got really quiet. Jeannie, what do you
Want to hear from me again? Oh, of course, what I focused on was Ryan and the transitioning and real estate expectations of not doing in the morning, which I told myself you shouldn't be doing in the morning, and I let him back on it. So my takeaway from it was what you said, prevent the meltdown and management of it, which I really liked saying that. Just prevent. He didn't really have a meltdown. He just gets angry. He doesn't throw anything yet. Thank goodness he doesn't do that. But just manage what's going on and just don't let it happen in the morning. And you just can't have video games. You lose 15 minutes of time for that, and he doesn't get it the next day. If he does it again, he's just not going to get it in the next day. But I need to be consistent with it and don't waver and don't change my mind, because that's when I falter with it.
How hard is this going to be for you?
You know, I don't like his angry moods. He just gets so angry, and he just takes it out on everyone. You know, I just hate his. He's just so negative. You know, and I'm much more a people pleaser.
This is going to sound like a weird question, but how could getting angry help him?
How could it help him?
It can reset. I noticed my son, after he kind of has an explosion, it's a way of resetting. And occasionally I'll even get an apology, but and that's rare, to be honest. But I noticed that after he really gets upset, he feels better. And sometimes the upset is longer than I'd like it to be, but I actually noticed after this past 2-week break, his episodes are getting shorter. And I don't know if that's just because of the positive talk that we've been having in the house and he's feeling better about who he is, that he's not such a bad person. But I think that's the good thing about kind of kids getting these kids, ADHD kids. I think it helps them. I don't know. My boy has sensory problems too, so that might be why it helps him reset, because he does a little explosion and then he feels better.
Well, I would say that's pretty typical. I mean, I think that even in ADHD adults, I think that energy, that intense catabolic energy, you get into fight or flight. It's like if you can get some of it out of your body, it helps you to calm down. And so I think a lot of times when we like try to squelch anger and we try to hold it in, it actually ends up being more detrimental than if we can just get it out and then move past. And it just depends on your child and their disposition and your disposition and what you can handle. And it's hard when you have a value of not yelling or not being unkind. It's hard to let that happen, but it might be worth exploring.
Well, I think the problem is not that he gets angry as much as what follows that. As you hate me, I hate myself, I hate my life, I want to die, and that, you know, and I know I'm like, you know what, you need to take that back. You know, he just goes on this tangent, I hate myself, you hate me, I hate my life, I wish I wasn't born, I'm just that, I don't like.
Yeah, and it's
and
hard.
That's
and
when
it's
his
hard.
Anger flares, and he goes into that mode of just explosion. Oh, my son doesn't want to be around him, we don't want to be around that, you know, and I...
And it's hard, and it's hard to be around that.
Yeah, and that's when I don't like that. And like here he goes down that little bunny trail. I'm like, it's pity. I know he wants the pity and everything else. I wish I wasn't born, and just, you know, just self defeated.
So
and
what
just,
would happen? So Jeannie, what would happen if you just didn't engage when he got like that?
Well, sometimes I don't, and I just walk away. And I know Ryan, you want the pity. You hate me. No one likes me. Blah blah blah. And it just perpetuates, and he just does it all the time. It's like, when do you stop that? You know what I mean? He just goes on if you don't say, I don't want to hear it anymore. You know, and he'll go on and then he'll cry and slam the door and go in his room and cry himself to sleep. And that's how he ends it. He'll just go to sleep.
Well, and sometimes the reality is that the emotion gets so overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
Going to sleep is the best way to calm down.
Yeah, but he doesn't get his way. It's like... Sorry, you know, you just can't run away. To me, you just can't run away from it. I don't like them running away from it because he's never going to get through it. I guess I'm someone who likes to get through it, and maybe he just cannot. That's how he does. That's how he does. If he'll just go to sleep. He'll get so mad and angry, slam the door, and go to sleep. And the next day, he will apologize.
Well,
he realizes I was
so
a mess. I'm trying to work,
so,
you know.
So, Jeannie, can I give you a challenge, and then I'm going to move on to somebody else?
Sure. I know, so, I went over. Sorry.
Really? Yeah, no, that's all right. So, spend some time really looking at what a realistic expectation is for him in terms of managing his frustration and anger. And really
mm-hmm.
try to help him to set an expectation that's realistic. Because it
mm-hmm.
sounds like you'd like him to be able to be more mature, but he's not. Is that fair?
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Anybody else want to do a wrap-up in terms of what they want to focus in on for the next couple weeks? Any last comments? You guys are really quiet today. Maybe it's just the time of day. All right. We are on again in 2 weeks on the 18th. And the topic for next time is systems and structures. So thanks, everybody, for being with us today, and we look forward to talking to you in a couple weeks.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Diane. Okay. Bye.